In suburban Tokyo, Toru Okada's life begins unraveling with something deceptively simple, the disappearance of a cat. Recently unemployed after quitting his law firm job, Toru spends his days cooking pasta, ironing shirts, and searching neighborhood alleys for their missing pet, named, ironically, after his wife Kumiko's despised brother Noboru Wataya. This domestic mystery soon spirals into something far stranger when anonymous phone calls begin, a woman's voice, sexually explicit and unnervingly knowledgeable about Toro's inner life. Then Kumiko herself vanishes, leaving only a cryptic note about needing to be with another man. What begins as a straightforward search transforms into a journey through Tokyo's dreamlike underbelly. Toru encounters Mei Kasahara, a precocious 16-year-old who contemplates mortality with unsettling casualness. The Kano sisters, dressed in 1950s fashion and speaking in riddles, and a mysterious bird whose mechanical cry, creak, seems to wind the spring of the world each morning. Is perfect understanding between humans possible? This question haunts Toru as his seemingly solid marriage reveals hidden depths. The genius of Murakami's world lies in how the extraordinary infiltrates daily life, not through dramatic ruptures, but through quiet shifts in reality that accumulate until the familiar becomes unrecognizable. The abandoned well on the Miyawaki property serves as Toru's portal between worlds. In its absolute darkness, he experiences visions that blur reality and dream. "I try to separate from my flesh," he explains, "to become nothing but a vacant house, an abandoned well." These descents mirror the novel's psychological journey into the unconscious. In darkness, Toru develops the ability to pass through walls, entering room 208 where crucial encounters occur. The well connects to the symbol of walls, invisible barriers separating characters, what Toru describes as a wall of flesh between himself and Kumiko despite their physical intimacy. The well gains historical dimension through Lieutenant Mamiya's wartime story. Thrown into a dry well by Soviet forces in 1939 and left to die, Mamiya's spirit perishes, though his body survives. For Toru, however, the well becomes a place of transformation where he develops the strength to rescue Kumiko from her metaphorical prison. Names wield extraordinary power throughout the novel. It opens with a cat named after Kumiko's brother Noboru Wataya, foreshadowing him as antagonist. When the cat returns, Toru renames it Mackerel, symbolically breaking Noboru's influence over their household. The mysterious guides in Toru's journey adopt suggestive aliases, Malta and Krita Kano, Mediterranean islands, later Nutmeg and Cinnamon. These names represent reinvention beyond family constraints. Toru becomes Mr. Windup Bird, nicknamed by Mei Kasahara after the unseen creature whose cry winds the world's spring each morning, acknowledging his role maintaining order through observation. When this bird stops calling, Toru's world unravels. The novel also explores namelessness through the mysterious caller who refuses identification and the faceless hollow man guiding Toru. Money derives power from its interchangeability. Significantly, the novel shares its title with documents created within the story, suggesting that naming experiences winds the world's spring, keeping time moving despite past traumas. Beneath Tokyo's neon-lit present runs an undercurrent of historical trauma centered on Japan's imperial adventures in Manchuria. Through Lieutenant Mamiya's harrowing stories, personal crisis connects to national wounds that have never healed. Mamiya recounts his 1939 border mission where he witnessed his superior being skinned alive by Boris the Manskinner, whom he later encounters in Siberian imprisonment. These brutal scenes contextualize the novel's exploration of evil, suggesting Noboru Wataya's malevolence has historical precedence. Another thread comes through Nutmeg's father, a veterinarian at the Manchurian Zoo who witnesses soldiers methodically executing dangerous animals on Japan's Surrender Day in 1945, a clumsy massacre paralleling human violence. The veterinarian bears a cheek mark identical to one Toru mysteriously develops. The novel presents history as a labyrinth of entangled cause and effect, not simplified moral lessons. Characters are affected by events predating their birth, suggesting historical trauma can be inherited across generations. Healing requires acknowledging both national and personal dimensions of these wounds. Noboru Wataya embodies modern evil through manipulation and truth corruption rather than violence. Physically unremarkable, except for a cold, piercing gleam in his eyes, he represents a subtler form of villainy. Tor's hatred stems from sensing something fundamentally wrong behind Noboru's public persona, like a persistent low-grade fever. What Tor detects is the absence of any authentic self. Noboru has merely fabricated his world by combining one-dimensional systems of thought, adapting chameleon-like to each situation. This emptiness makes him the perfect television intellectual and politician. He delivers fatal argumentative blows with a smile, appealing to audiences through emotional triggers and impressive jargon. Kumiko's revelations expose how Noboru psychologically defiled both her and her sister, creating a pollution that drove her sister to suicide and left Kumiko vulnerable to his influence, a violation more profound than physical assault. Noboru's portrayal remains relevant today, embodying the empty charisma of media personalities who rise to power without substantive ideas. Is this a dream? Toru frequently wonders, a question without simple answers in Murakami's world. The novel blurs boundaries between reality and dream, presenting alternative states of consciousness that offer unique insights. Toru's well descents trigger visions more vivid than his waking life. His encounters with Krita Kano occur in a liminal space between dream and reality. The hotel with room 208 functions as both physical location and psychological space for confrontations. Mei Kasahara describes becoming Kumiko when moonlight transforms her shadow, while her duck people create a parallel world where animal behavior mirrors human struggles. Murakami refuses to privilege any perspective as definitively real. The novel suggests reality is multiple and layered, with dreams offering valid insights rather than mere fantasies. Cinnamon's grandfather's view of the world as like a revolving door articulates reality as discontinuous and perspective-dependent. This approach connects to Japanese literary traditions valuing suggestion over explicit statement, and reflects modern physics' view of reality as observer-dependent. The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle portrays storytelling as our tool to comprehend chaos, preserve memory, and survive. The novel unfolds through embedded narratives, Lieutenant Mamiya's war experiences, Nutmeg's zoo massacre account, Krita Kano's history, and Mei Kasahara's letters. Meaning emerges from these interconnections. When Toru hears Lieutenant Mamiya's story about being thrown into a well, its significance becomes clear only later, providing a template for his own descents into darkness. Cinnamon's creation of the Wind-Up Bird Chronicle documents represents the novel's most explicit exploration of storytelling as meaning-making. Mute since childhood, he creates narratives that think and seek and grow, filling gaps in family history with imaginative reconstructions that reveal deeper truths. Like the mysterious bird whose mechanical cry winds the world each morning, stories prevent reality from unwinding into chaos. Kumiko's letter and Mei's correspondence help articulate identities and make sense of suffering. This is Murakami's insight. Stories can wind the spring again, creating meaning where none seemed possible.